I'm Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby and in the Icon Gallery, and this is Icon Art Radio. Well, go ahead and read that quote.
Well, actually, it isn't a quote. Oh. It's just some notes I took. I was reading something, and this idea appealed to me.
What was it? Do you know who the author was?
Remember.
No, that's okay. It doesn't matter. It was an interesting quote.
Multiple books at the same time.
And anyway, to some discussion.
I jotted this down. I was talking about art as an alchemical process, any kind of art, as an alchemical process where old forms and structures of all sorts are broken apart, and then the separate elements are reconfigured to form a higher synthesis of some sort. And that this, so that art then is not just, we tend to think of art as creativity, but with this idea, art is not just creativity, it's also destruction, reintegration, and then the creative birth then comes out of that whole process. So anyway, I thought that was, and also in the same notes I wrote down that the word art itself, the Indo-European root of it is R-A-R, which means to fit together, a fusion, putting together a new order. So,
but for the new order to come about, there has to be a destruction of
the old order. Right.
That's why any new art movement has always had to force its way through those forces that want things to remain the same. But things never remain the same. So the artists are always at the forefront of the new way. That's why it's gotten that idea of the avant-garde. Mm-hmm. It's just the way, it seems to be the way of it, and it seems, and I think that this thing sort of pinpointed and named the process more precisely. I was bringing out in our conversation before the show began that I was having that urge as a person, as me, and that's because I'm an artist, and I think that art, you know, there's conservatives and then there's more progressive types of people, and I think both types keep the universe from blowing apart, that you need the people that are kind of don't want things to change too fast, and then you want the people that want, and then there's always the people that want things to change immediately, and the way things actually move is a process that takes place between these two forces. But the artists tend to be those who create new forms necessarily have to respond and break down the old forms to move forward, and that's what artists do, which is what you just said. But I am an artist, and I feel that in the very marrow of my existence, this need to reinvent and change and break away from and break down. And I was having this discussion with you guys about where do I want to go from here in terms of how things are with Icon Gallery and teaching and making art and all those things that I do. And I have that stirring inside that I can't just see things going on exactly the way they are, just mounting new shows of Iowa artists and regional artists year after year until I just drop dead. My feeling is not to keep things going, because I'm an artist and I want to keep advancing and changing. So we were discussing, you know, how can things change here a little bit towards a more integrated, holistic way of interacting with artists. In fact, the last show we did was exploring, when we talked about how can an art show be reinvented so that there's more of a direct experience taking place between the viewer and the object and the artist. So I'm always thinking along these lines myself. I think it's just the nature of the artist.
How about taking the gallery and dividing it into some number of sections and then assigning an artist to each section on the agreement that this artist will continually update their section, so that some artist might come in and add something every few days or take something away or change a set of paintings or continue a cycle of paintings. but a visitor to the gallery would never know what they're going to see. They would never know whether something has just been installed or is something that's been there for a year. Each section would be largely curated by the artist, but the collection of sections, the gallery as a whole, would still be a coherent, you know, statement of some kind in the selection of artists.
Well, this is not unlike the concept that I've put out there for the compound of artists, where every artist has their little studio and every artist has their little exhibition space, I call it a personal museum or personal gallery, that they're constantly curating, and they're pulling from their body of work, and they're changing it out, and giving, because what we want here is for there to be a communion of souls between the artist who is creating new forms, which is what you defined art as, putting things together in a new way, and from his point of view on reality, and the viewers, and so there's a meeting point, there's a point at which their souls commune, there's a place where they come together. And I always felt that an artist could maybe do that more if he had his own space to curate in, to present what he has to give in his own, have an own, his own personal thing all the time. That was my thinking.
Yeah.
So this is getting along those lines. What we need is for someone to donate all of the buildings in the town to our efforts, or a whole town, or to go get an army base like Don Judd did.
Yeah, we could do that.
That's good, because, I mean, we're all on the same page here, because when a few years ago when I was conceiving of an art institute, you know, one of the aspects of the art institute was this room that I called the changing room. And the changing room, like every month, there would be an artist or a group of artists who would be in charge of the room, and they would, you know, do, and like you were saying, Alan, an ongoing work of art where they could paint the walls, they could do, you know, whatever they wanted to, build something, hang paintings, anything, play music, whatever, and people could come and go. In the idea, it was also, one end of it was kind of a little cafe, so people could come in, sit and drink their coffee and watch the artists at work, knowing that it would be changing from day to day. And then, you know, finally after a month it's finished and then it's dismantled and a new artist or group of artists come in and create something completely new.
I like the idea of the juxtaposition of different artists at the same time.
Yeah, I like that too.
I like that idea too.
Because, you know, it can range all the way from someone who is doing, you know, just a very traditional set of paintings, and they're on display in, you know, one of our mobile sections here. But someone else could be doing a performance piece or an installation. I mean, in a sense, each of them is an installation. But they could go all the way into installation, where the installation is the art rather than an aspect of the art. I just think, God, I mean, I'd love to see that happen. I think it would be really fun.
Well, so, I mean,
if things
open up a little bit more in a couple of years, which is what I was discussing with you, I could imagine having my space up where I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And I'll constantly, see, the idea would be I'd be creating and curating in a completely personal way. Because what I do now is more, I'm taking into account everyone's awareness in the area and all the artists in the area, and I'm presenting a kind of a picture of what's going on. And it's not so much tuned exactly to my personal taste, but if I did that, then that would start to be my area for this.
Yeah.
And if we set an example of that, and that other artists have a space where they could do that, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it is. And you were mentioning the sort of point at which you saw a big transition taking place in 2 years when the gallery would have its 10th anniversary, but you also would turn 65, and Alan and I also, because we're all three the same age, would all be turning 65 that year. And 65 being traditionally thought of as retirement age, it seems to be a logical time to destroy the old form and create something new, because nobody anymore thinks of retirement as just, you know, not doing anything and going off and fishing every day.
Well, artists generally make art, just do their thing until
right.
the day they die.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
they
nice
don't
to have
retire. But so my thought was to retire from the way I kind of it ought to be done, or
right,
the way
yeah.
it's being done, to. Because when you get to be 65 and you're kind of an elder, people give, they sort of like give you a little bit of
leeway
right. to get kooky and to be eccentric, that I could get a little more personal and kooky about it.
Kooky, boy, there's a phrase that dates you.
uh-huh.
It's not even a phrase, it's just a
right. Well,
word.
When you're 65, then you say things like,
well,
you know,
I was reading
dated,
an article.
Dated phrases.
It's real hip.
Somebody did an article, I can't remember again where I read this either, but it was about all of the terms that people who were born, you uh-huh. know, who are like graduating from high school right now or something, just they're meaningless to them. Things that we totally take for granted and think that, like one of the ones that they mentioned was RSVP. You know, we just assume everybody knows what RSVP means, but in this more modern, younger generation, there are a lot of people who have no idea.
But aren't there people who have parties and things that are more cultured that know what RSVP means?
Yeah, but there's a lot of people. But that was just one. That's one example I thought of.
I think
of,
neat is a word that I still use, that
yeah.
the kids look at each other and wonder what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that... okay, now I just like went blank.
I'm sorry.
There was
I interrupted you.
There was another thing that was very interesting. Oh yeah, I remember. It was people. There were certain people who, like one example they used was Paul Newman, where you mentioned Paul Newman to somebody of a certain younger generation, and they'll actually say, "Oh, the salad dressing guy."
Right.
Because they really have never seen a Paul Newman movie. And there are other people like that who have gone through different phases of their lives who the younger generation only knows them in their current incarnation.
Which
well,
brings
I think
up
a lot
our...
of people go to Vietnam for vacation now. A lot of kids are very happy to, you know, very excited about exploring Vietnam and going there to you know, travel and learn about the different culture. And, and they don't have any of the associations of Vietnam as a theater of an idiotic war.
Yeah.
Which brings up our discussions we've had in the last couple of shows about what we bring to the work of art, you know, our associations and our what it's going to tick off in us. You know, you don't know. I mean, especially, I can know maybe what you might bring to a painting that I make because we're all exactly the same age and we went through a lot of the same experiences together. But a young person that's 20 coming and looking at something that I might make, I mean, they may miss half most of what I'm thinking when I'm making it. So it's, and they will inherit the earth. I will not be here. And in recent years, I've thought a lot about education because as you get older, you realize that you're not going to have everything forever and own it all, that it's always a custodianship situation, and you're always in the process, the older generations are always in the process of handing it off to the younger generation. So the process of handing it off seems to be like one of the most significant elements in our the way we move and develop as a culture.
That's an interesting point, and it's the biggest breakthrough points in people's lives usually tend to be when they're in their early 20s, you know, forging their way into the world. And when you read about huge cultural changes in Paris or New York, it's artists who were young when they began to make these go into some completely new direction. And then as we get older, I think we all retain a kind of nostalgic fondness for the kinds of breakthroughs that happened when we ourselves were that age. Like, you know, here in town with the concert celebrating Woodstock, where all of the old songs that, you know, all of us loved in the 60s are replayed, there's something that sparks everybody who was a part of that transition back in the 1960s and still sparks us when we hear those old songs. It still brings about the thrills that we felt in our role in dismantling the old order and helping to usher in the new order. So the fact that we're dated is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that we had our generational role and we're still kind of in it. And our generational role at retirement is going to be something different, but there will be a group flavor of that too, probably.
But I think it's important for us as an older generation now to not to do our best to try to understand the reality structure of the younger generation.
Yeah,
because they're making, I mean, already the structure of the art world in this postmodern art world, it in some ways, as much of it is distasteful to me, and yet I have to understand that it's the reality of how art is moving forward. And I can't, and these younger people doing the installation art and video and computer and all this stuff that the media of today have a lot of trouble relating, I think, to what we just sort of like in our heads think of as the art world and what art is. It's a whole other place.
And which actually would be it would be an interesting thing to do for an odd Thursday sometime, is actually have a very young artist come in and tell us about that relationship to art.
You could invite them in as representatives of another culture, in the context of explaining to this culture what their values are and what they look for, and hopefully get some distance from the idea of the new replacing the old, and see it more as just the new communicating with the old.
Yeah. Because it really isn't a matter of new and old, really. It's a matter of life going through its cycles and Ouroboros concept instead of the linear concept of the way life moves.
Well, and that's why this would be a nice event, because it would be the eternal reality and the truth of things always, and patterns playing themselves out, our way of playing out those patterns and the younger generation's way of playing out those patterns, but they're the same patterns. But there's always change and new forms being made. It's one to different forms of replacing the old forms.
Yeah. Like Joseph Campbell's always quoting a guy who his main thing was that everything is just eternal archetypes playing themselves out in different ways over and over and over again. And I always love that concept, because it's a nice handle to have on reality. There are many handles you can have, many vantage points that you can use to look at the way life operates. But maybe because I'm an artist, that's an especially appealing one, because it tends to have a strong visual impact.
Mircea Eliade is probably the guy who was quoting, and his most famous book is called Cosmos and History, The Myth of the Eternal Return. And he uses myth in a very specific sense, not meaning the fable of, but meaning the worldview of.
And so in that sense, going back to our original theme of art being the breaking down of old forms and structures and then reconfiguring them and creating something new, it adds another way of looking at that. If it's if there are these eternal archetypes that are playing themselves out in different ways, there's nothing actually then that's being broken down and reassembled. Instead, it's just like a dance, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same forms, the same structures that are just dancing a different step or playing
This is the distinction that Eliade is really looking at, is the distinction between cosmos and history. Mm-hmm. In the sense that the cosmic view is this myth of the eternal return. It's the archetype being recapitulated in human life over and over again as a re-manifestation of the sacred, of the Platonic ideal. It's very much a Platonic notion. And then we get into, you know, the alternative to that, which is the modern view, which is 1,000 years old or two, in the West, which says something more like Newton's comment. I think it was Newton who said, you know, if I've seen farther than others, it's only because I stood on the shoulders of giants. Mm. And that's a linear view of it. That's saying that the old is not being broken down at all, it's being built upon. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, even the historical view looks at it from over a longer perspective and sees that, yes, the new is built upon the old rather than destroying the old, but still when it gets old enough, you know, that's when you discover that the really, really old is in fact completely lost to us. We've forgotten what it is, and it's, you know, the 15th generation of the city of Troy built on ancient Troys and still more ancient Troys going back heaven knows how far. So we have the notion of progress, and then at the same time we have this mythic notion of the recapitulation of some sort of celestial fundamental.
And they're all true from a different vantage. You know, it's just like all the opposites are valid in their own way, and they all work together. And you know, in thinking about this alchemical process of breaking down the old and creating the new, really that takes place in every moment of our lives. You know, every little transitional moment in our thinking or in our action involves, on a tiny scale, that process of the old crumbling, the new arising out of that.
Sure, it's the three gunas.
Yeah,
it's Shiva obliterating something to make room for Brahma to create something, if you will, and Vishnu keeping Shiva and Brahma just far enough apart so that something actually can exist.
Yeah, which is interesting because that idea of a maintainer, mm-hmm. or maintenance of life, you know, even in terms of like keeping our house clean or something like that, is not generally the most appealing part of life. I've always even thought to myself, you know, I don't like to have to do maintenance. I don't like to have to take my car in for an oil change, and I don't like to have to vacuum my floor and all of that. But on all levels, even as artists and making progress in our creative work, the balancing factor of maintenance of some kind of order has to be present.
Well, as Alan
it's really
says,
essential.
Life takes place in that.
In that, yeah.
Place.
Yeah.
Between the two.
Right, right.
And I always feel, just in my practical experience in life, that life has to move in steps of breaking down and change, and then a safe
haven.
Yeah, no, there's another word I use for it.
A platform.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. There's a platform. We move from a safety zone platform through change to another safety zone platform through change to another safety zone. If it was all just constantly changing, we'd all just go insane real fast. So these So this natural tendency to like plateau is absolutely necessary to progress.
And even when you're in
And it's where life is lived. I mean, a lifetime could be considered that.
Yeah, exactly. And but on a level of tinier increments of time, even when you're in the process of change, that factor is playing a role always. You know, we possibly maintenance has just the name. Here we go back to the no name ideas. Take away that word, maintenance, and call it something else. But it is a very dynamic, important function of life that allows us to handle our creativity and the destroying of the old.
Well, it's all an interplay of a force of evolution and a force of inertia or momentum and a force of entropy. Mm. And I mean, we usually think of it as in a sense, evolution versus entropy. You put intelligence into something and, you know, things come together and you have life, and life sucks orderliness out of the environment and becomes more orderly in its own right at the expense of its immediate environment. But then if you leave things alone, the order dissipates, and if you leave a Volkswagen alone, it turns into a pile of rust, as opposed to leaving a pile of rust alone and it does not ever turn into a Volkswagen. And that, which, you know, it shows there's a direction of that force in a metaphysical sense. But what is often omitted from that discussion is the notion of momentum. And that's really, I guess, the Vishnu force, or the notion that things are moving in a direction, but it's only when there's a balance between the two extremes that things can continue. Mm.
So as a society, the world needs visionaries, revolutionaries, and conservatives, who are the traditionalists. You know, that there's this balance that's created by having all of these different aspects of society that tend to be like battling with each other and arguing all the time. But society couldn't function, the world couldn't function without people playing all of these different roles.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.